Iran removes two surveillance cameras of the International Atomic Energy Agency, saying their activity was beyond its commitments under the safeguards agreement. Iran's leader describes Hajj as a symbol of unity among Muslims and warns of UK attempts to create rifts between Shias and Sunnis. Also in the headlines, a report says the Pentagon has failed to track civilian deaths in Yemen, even though they were caused by an array of deadly U.S.-made weapons. Thanks for joining us. Iran says it has removed two surveillance cameras of the International Atomic Energy Agency from one of its nuclear sites. The Atomic Energy Organization of Iran said the two cameras had been installed voluntarily and beyond the safeguards obligations of the IAEA. The organization said the IAEA has not only been ungrateful for Iran's extensive cooperation, but has also considered it as a duty. It said that Iran has shown its goodwill by all our cooperation with the nuclear watchdog. This, as an anti-Tehran resolution, will be put to vote at the upcoming meeting of the IAEA's Board of Governors. The draft, which was submitted by the U.S. and its three European allies, accuses Iran of insufficient cooperation. Iran has condemned the move. The head of the Atomic Energy Organization says that Iran has no hidden or undocumented nuclear activities or undisclosed sites. Mohammad Islami says the submission of an anti-Tehran draft is in line with a political move to maintain maximum pressure on Iran. Keen Mansfield is an author and analyst at the Center for Political Innovation who joins us from Austin, Texas. Keen Mansfield, welcome. You know, when you take a look at maybe not even 2 weeks ago, where the news was all about, we're 90% there, some differences remain, but very optimistic, at least from the side of the E3, which obviously Iran does not have direct discussions with the U.S., to now where there's obviously been a huge diversion. And the only thing that is different, apparently, at least that's what it seems like, is how Israel has come into the picture. Do you agree?
I do. As a matter of fact, just yesterday I was reading an article from RT International that was saying Israel was really throwing a fit over Iran and the IAEA because of concerns. Israel was expressing concerns that perhaps Iran was trying to hide something from the international community. And of course, the article mentioned that Israel does not allow IAEA oversight on any of their nuclear programs whatsoever. So I think it's rather rich, it's ironic, it's also a bit horrifying that the closest ally, the greatest ally of the U.S., which is Israel, wants to accuse Iran and try to turn this into a political move to further sanction Iran and try to hurt Iran and force it further and further out of the international community than it already has been. I find it then pretty ironic or hypocritical that Israel doesn't allow any oversight on their nuclear programs or really on their country or so-called country whatsoever.
When Rafael Grossi addressed the Board of Governors, I'm taking a look at the statement that he said. The media plays a very important role in shaping, I'm sure you'll agree, public perception on this. Of course, they cherry-picked his statement, of which he said, since they, Iran, are continuing with the process to enrich uranium, well, then it's a matter of just a few weeks to get enough material to create a nuclear bomb. Now, the reason why I say that's cherry-picked and put out there is because, well, you have not only an IAEA article, but also technicians who have said that to get to that nuclear bomb or weaponizing it, it will take 2 years, 1 to 2 years, if not longer. So you can see where I'm going with this. Is this a matter of the IAEA diverting from its technical involvement and turning it into a political one?
Yes, I absolutely agree. What you're saying about media playing an impact is 100% the case. I believe that there was therefore quite a long time since following the Islamic Revolution, there have been articles from Voice of America and other U.S. state-controlled media apparatus that are saying Iran is, it's only 5 years away from nuclear weapons, or it's only 8 months, or it's only 2 years. And our American media has been saying this for every bit of 20 years. So I have a hard time to nuclearize its military and having the nuclear option. Iran has expressed really no interest whatsoever in obtaining and creating destruction. And what about cherry picking the statement that went to the IAEA is very true, because as soon as mainstream media here in the United States picks this story up, which won't take long, it's going to be that Iran has moved any sort of international oversight in their nuclear program, when that's clearly not the case. I'm seeing right here 80% of the agency's cameras continue to work in Iran's nuclear facilities. So this is going to be one of those stories that is completely misrepresented here in mainstream U.S. media, and that's going to have a negative impact for Iran, because there's already, sadly, very high anti-Iran sentiments here in the U.S., and this is only going to further this very national distrust of Iran.
Thank you very much for that. Keaton Mansfield, author and analyst at the Center for Political Innovation. Thank you. Moving on, leader of the Islamic Revolution has called for strengthening unity among Muslims, warning of Britain's attempts to sow discord among Shia and Sunni Muslims. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei made the remarks during a meeting with organizers of caravans of Iranian Hajj pilgrims. He said the pilgrimage is a manifestation of unity within the Muslim community. Ayatollah Khamenei also hit out at the nexus between some Arab governments and the Israeli regime, saying that normalization would be beneficial to no one. He said the ties with Israel would harm the very Arab countries that normalize. The leader said the people in those Arab countries are also opposed to shaking hands with the regime. Ayatollah Khamenei said normalization agreements come as a result of constant pressure that Washington puts on the involved governments. Four Arab countries, the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Sudan, and Morocco, have already normalized with Israel under U.S. brokered agreements back in the year 2020. The move sparked an outcry in the Muslim world. Palestinians in particular denounced it as a stab in the back. Joining us on the phone is Sam Mathew Torabi. He's the director of the Risalat Strategic Studies Institute. Sam Mathew Torabi, welcome. So it's pretty interesting here. The leader has indicated the UK as sowing attempts in order to, I guess, put discord among Shia and Sunni Muslims. Why is the UK being singled out by Iran's leader there, do you think?
Good afternoon, Kaveh. Good to be with you. Well, you know, this is the old system that the British always use, which is divide and conquer. When they came to take over the Muslim world, they looked for different things that can separate the society, and with that division, they can then rule. So one of the things that exists in the Muslim world is the difference between Shias and Sunnis. But the point that the Supreme Leader was making is that the things that Shias and Sunnis have in common are so much more than the differences, and the point is to focus on the commonalities and to focus on the common enemy, which is the British or the Americans after the British, who are trying to take over the whole Muslim world, and they don't care about Sunni Shia. So this is just a reminder of the historic role that the British have had in this story over the decades and almost more than a century.
And, of course, the normalization or so-called normalization of ties between some Arab regimes and in Israel, he said that they are going to get hurt at the end. Perhaps there needs to be an obligation from other Muslim countries showing how these Arab regimes are going to get hurt. What examples can you say or can you cite in terms of them getting hurt that maybe Iran's leader is talking about?
We're sitting in the best example, which is Iran, which is before the revolution, the Pahlavi regime had relations with Israel. But, of course, the people were against it. We have to also make a distinction that there are countries that have actual real populations and are real countries, like Sudan, like Morocco. And then there are countries that are not real countries. They are just ruling families with no population or popular support, and who will cling on to any power that is going to allow them to stay in power, such as Bahrain or the Emirates or even Saudi Arabia to a certain extent. If we look at Saudi Arabia not as one country but as a amalgamation of different regions that Al Saud have conquered over the last 70 years. So this is the reality. The reality is that we have countries who have the backing of their people, the governments, such as Iran. And so when Iran has a government, contrary to the Pahlavi regime where the people are backing it, it can make decisions regarding Israel that are in line with the popular beliefs and views of the majority of the population. We have countries who are just pure dictatorships like Morocco or Sudan who don't care about their people. And then we have these, you know, families that are given flags and passports and sovereignty by the British when they left in 1971, who don't care. One day it's the British, the next day it's the Americans, and then when Trump says, hey, we're going to be leaving, they are immediately, you know, handed over to the Israelis so that the Israelis can back these families. And so this is not a sustainable way of surviving. So for those countries that have the populations, we see the Iranian example of what happened. When the people are able to gain power, and they will gain power, those governments will be overthrown and popular governments will come in power. And these families, obviously, you know, are a sort of system that is going to be temporarily existing in this part of the world as a remnant, as an anachronism of the time of the British. And in time, those countries will also either be not exist even anymore because there's no population, or those people that they have imported and that are now being used as servants and slaves and quasi-slaves, as we see in the Emirates or in some of these sheikhdoms in the southern Persian Gulf, these people themselves will become the new population of those countries, and we won't have these sheikhs anymore. So this is the reality of the matter.
Thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. Sam Mahdi Torabi, Director of the Rasala Strategic Studies Institute. Thank you. The Iranian Petroleum Minister has warned Western states against punitive measures targeting Iran and Russia, saying that such behavior seriously threatens global energy security. Speaking at a ceremony marking Russia's National Day in Tehran, Javad Oghi said that Iran and Russia are two major suppliers of oil and gas worldwide. He mentioned plans by the West to ban energy imports from Russia over the war in Ukraine. He said that Europe cannot easily find an alternative for Russian oil and gas, and Washington plans are detrimental to the interests of the international community. The Iranian minister said sanctions are no solution to any problem and will hurt the very countries that impose them. For 7 years, the Saudi-led coalition has been using U.S.-made weapons to kill Yemenis, but American officials have failed to keep track of how many civilians have fallen victim to the deadly munitions. An internal U.S. government report blames that on the State Department and the Pentagon. The report also says that they have failed to assess the use of American-made weapons in the killings. The report has not been publicly released as of yet, and the State Department is apparently trying to classify some parts and redact a number of lines. The findings span three U.S. administrations since the year 2015, when the war started. The report is especially important considering that President Joe Biden is preparing to visit Saudi Arabia this summer. He is facing criticism for failing to deliver on earlier promises to pressure the kingdom over its rice records and to cut the sales of offensive weapons used in the Yemen war. When it comes to the Americas, just like other parts of the world, the region is going through serious economic challenges such as inflation and poor growth, generally speaking. And President Biden of the United States has even made the matters worse. The White House has not invited Cuba and Venezuela to the 2022 Summit of the Americas in Los Angeles.
The United States has invited leaders of South and Central Americas to participate in the so-called the Summit of Americas. The summit, which runs from June the 6th to 10th in Los Angeles, is officially aimed at strengthening hemispheric solidarity. The conference comes amid growing U.S. involvement in the war in Ukraine and rising strategic rivalries between Beijing and Washington over hegemonic control of the global South. The summit is therefore an attempt to assert Washington's hegemonic ambitions over what it considers as its own backyard. However, it appears that countries in that region are not willing to bow down to U.S. ambitions. The U.S. regime has decided against inviting leaders of Cuba, Venezuela, and Nicaragua to the regional summit of the Americas, risking an embarrassing boycott of the Washington-hosted gathering by regional leaders.
And again, is the idea that the OAS and the Summit of the Americas has been historically a place that advances the agenda of imperialist United States. And so tables are turning in the continent, which is really hopeful. People are beginning to see that there is a possibility to develop projects of nation states that are not under the boot of the United States of America.
Furthermore, leaders from Mexico, Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador have rejected to participate in the Americas summit due to Washington's policy of exclusion after it refused to invite Venezuela, Nicaragua, and Cuba to the gathering. Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador slammed Washington's policy of exclusion and said it needs to change this desire to dominate the world without any reason. There cannot be an Americas summit if not all the continent's countries participate. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro praised the Mexican president's courage and clarity for choosing not to attend the summit, saying the U.S. government's decision to exclude three countries is an act of discrimination which ensures that the summit will fail. Chilean President Gabriel Boric also criticized the U.S. exclusion of South American countries and said that it was not the right path.
What is interesting in this context is that you have countries that are not necessarily socialist countries, but are countries that are starting to develop their own idea, their own vision of what their nation states should be, like is Mexico. Going against a politic of extraction and going against a politic that continues to rob their dignity and their ability to be sovereign countries.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
Nearly half of U.S. Republicans have said mass shooting incidents should be accepted as part of a free society. Following strict messaging guidelines, Republican politicians repeatedly claim mental health and security issues are to blame for mass shooting incidents in the U.S., not access to guns. We now present you an article written by Martin Pengelly. The piece is titled, Poll Finds Nearly Half of Republicans Think U.S. Has to Live with Mass Shootings. According to an opinion poll released in the aftermath of the Texas elementary school murders, and as politicians in Washington negotiate for gun reform, nearly half of Republican voters think the U.S. just has to live with mass shooting incidents. The CBS and YouGov opinion poll returned familiar results, including 62% support for a nationwide ban on semi-automatic rifles, the kind of gun used in Uvalde, Texas. 19 young children and 2 adults were killed at the Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas on 24th of May by an 18-year-old teenager who bought his weapon legally. But clear national support for a ban on such rifles or changes to purchasing ages and background checks is not mirrored in Congress. Most Republican politicians, supported financially by the powerful gun lobby, remain opposed to gun reform. In an effort fueled by horror at events in Uvalde, Texas, senators led by Chris Murphy, a Democrat from Connecticut, elected after the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting incident, which killed 26 in 2012, and John Cornyn, a Texas Republican, have expressed optimism that some changes may be possible. On Monday, 6th of June, Chris Murphy told NBC News, "Sometimes when we go away for a week, sensitive negotiations like this fall apart. This week, the opposite is happening, because my colleagues went home and heard the same thing I did. Parents are frightened to death." He said, "They're frightened to death for their kids, and they're frightened to death that government isn't going to be able to respond. The most fundamental concern the parents have, the safety of their children. I think senators are coming back to town today with a newfound resolve to get something done." Reporting on the Senate talks has largely focused on red flag laws designed to stop gun purchases by people deemed a potential danger to others or to themselves. In the CBS YouGov opinion poll, support for such laws ran at 72%. Senator Chris Murphy was asked, "Is this about incentivizing states to pass their own red flag laws or a federal one?" He said, "I actually don't think it will be a good idea to have a federal red flag law. I think it will be very inaccessible for local law enforcement to have to go to the federal court system. So I support the state laws. I think they need some guidance and some funding in order to implement these laws and make sure that everybody knows how to access them. A Senate reform package could also contain efforts to close loopholes in background checks." In the CBS YouGov opinion poll, support for federal background checks on all gun purchases ran at 81%. President Biden has called for an assault weapons ban, or at least raising the minimum age for purchases of guns. In the new opinion poll, 77% said the minimum age for buying an assault rifle should be higher than 18. 32% said it should be 21, and 45% said it should be over 25. Senator Chris Murphy said, "I think there's certainly Republican support for raising the age. I don't know whether there are 60 votes yet. And right now, my entire focus is on what can get 60 votes. But the new opinion poll's most telling evidence came when respondents were asked if mass shooting incidents were unfortunately something we have to accept as part of a free society, or something we can prevent and stop if we really tried. Among Democrats, 85% said mass shooting incidents could be stopped if US politicians would only try. Among independent voters, the figure was 73%. Overall, it was 72%. But 44% of Republicans said mass shooting incidents should be accepted as part of a free society. Following strict messaging guidelines, Republican politicians repeatedly claimed mental health and security issues are to blame for mass shooting incidents and not access to guns. Those who took part in the opinion poll were also asked, regardless of how you feel about the issue, how likely do you think it is that Congress will pass any laws in the next few months that will make significant changes to gun policy? Only 7% thought it was very likely that Congress would act, while a combined 69% thought it was not very likely or not at all likely. Some state governments have passed the so-called reforms. In New York City, on Monday, 6th of June, the state governor, Kathy Hochul, signed a package of laws including licensing measures for assault rifles and a minimum purchase age of 21, expanded red flag provisions, and a ban on sales of body armor. Kathy Hochul told reporters, "It just keeps happening. Shots ring out, flags come down, and nothing ever changes, except here in New York." However, the state is home to another politician whose fate starkly shows what can happen to Republicans who express openness to gun reform. On Friday, 3rd of June, the New York Congressman Chris Jacobs abandoned his bid for re-election after stoking fury by expressing support for a federal assault weapons ban. Congressman Chris Jacobs represents a suburb of Buffalo, New York, the city in which 10 people were shot dead at a supermarket on 14th of May in what authorities say was a racially motivated attack. Mass shooting incidents, widely defined as shootings in which 4 people, excluding the gunman, are held or killed, have continued since the Buffalo incident and the elementary school shooting in Uvalde, Texas. Recently, at a hospital in Tulsa, Oklahoma, a gunman killed 2 doctors, a receptionist, and a patient. According to the nonprofit Gun Violence Archive, the following weekend saw mass shooting incidents in Philadelphia, Chattanooga, South Carolina, Arizona, Texas, Georgia, New York, and Michigan. 15 people were killed and more than 60 others were wounded. The archive says there have been 246 mass shooting incidents in the United States in 2022, considerably more than one a day. On Sunday, 5th of June, Senator Chris Murphy claimed, "The possibility of success is better than ever before, but I think the consequences of failure for our entire democracy are more significant than ever." According to a new opinion poll, most Americans believe the new legislation aimed at reducing gun violence should be prioritized over protecting gun rights. The ABC Ipsos opinion poll, which comes in the wake of a deadly string of mass shooting incidents in the U.S., said 7 out of 10 people in the country prioritize laws reducing gun violence over gun rights. The opinion poll showed only 21%, or less than one-third of those interviewed, believed that gun rights should be a higher priority than reducing gun violence in the country. Most Democrats said lawmakers should prioritize laws focused on reducing gun violence, while about half of the Republican respondents said protecting the rights of gun owners is a higher priority. The opinion poll was conducted from 3rd to 4th of June as the country mourned those killed in multiple mass shooting incidents, including 10 people at a grocery store in New York, 21 at an elementary school shooting in Uvalde, Texas. The political debate over gun control has been one of the most divisive issues in U.S. society for decades. The issue of gun control has culminated in a multi-million dollar lobbying campaign, congressional standoffs, and mass demonstrations for those for and against gun laws. The root of the debate is a single sentence in the U.S. Constitution, where the Second Amendment says, "A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed." A dispute on the interpretation of the Second Amendment separates the Democrats, who believe in stricter gun control laws, from the Republicans, who see any such legislation as an infringement of their gun rights.
علي حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وسي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin was salatu was salamu ala sayidina Muhammadin wa ala ahli baytihi at-tayyibin at-tahirin. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of the Charter of Islamic Governance based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. We are currently taking inspiration from the 16th sermon, which is a very important sermon in Nahjul Balagha, which is actually kind of the starting speech that Imam Ali alayhi salam gave amongst a crowd of thousands of people, explaining his governance program. And we reached this phrase where Imam Ali alayhi salam was talking about taking lessons from the past and applying them in your lives. This is a very important principle that Imam Ali alayhi salam repeats in various parts of Nahjul Balagha, where he says, إِنَّ مَنْ صَرَّحَتْ لَهُ الْعِبَرُ عَمَّا بَيْنَ يَدَيْهِ مِنَ الْمَثُلَاتِ حَجَزَتْهُ التَّقْوَى أَن تَقَهُمِ الشُّبُهَاتِ. He says that person who has had a clear understanding of the lessons of what has happened before him, then he will achieve a certain level of taqwa, or he will have taqwa, he will have piety that will stop him, that will protect him from things that are doubtful and things that are not clear. This is something very important that Imam Ali alayhi salam is trying to tell us, and inshallah we will try to use our time and our ability to be able to try and understand these statements.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to IRIB English Radio. So we realized that there are certain principles that govern the universe, and therefore there also are principles also in the social realm, in the realm of the society, and they can repeat themselves. And this shows that if a person is careful and he's smart in trying to understand these things, he will realize that whenever societies grew and became more powerful and became more successful, it was because of certain reasons, certain causes. And also when those societies became redundant, they became weak, they became slow, it was because of certain other causes. So a person who looks at these causes and effects, he will start to create and have an understanding of those principles. When we realize now that similar laws, okay, as similar causes have similar effects, then we understand now that there is a synchrony between these causes and effects. And when you understand and realize this synchrony between the causes and effects, those principles become clear for us. And smart people now use those principles and reflect them in their present life to see what to do and to see what they can avoid in the future, to not enter into the darknesses that other communities reached, or rather perform those good things that can take them towards the light that other societies are able to achieve. This is something that is quite valuable, and we see that is something that can be really helpful in our lives. Now, we have heard a lot of things about taking lessons from history. We want to now understand the actual, right form and methodology of thinking, the in-depth, correct method of understanding that Islam has, postulated for us, has brought forth for us through the Quran and from the statements of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam and from Imam Ali alayhi salam. We want to be able to analyze this issue and be able to see how we can get a hold of those principles. Then we are able to apply them in the present life. So not everyone has the ability to just look at history and extract those principles. Sometimes, yes, we can, but you need the tools. You need an in-depth understanding, and that in-depth understanding can be brought to us from the Quran. Inshallah, this is what we want to discuss in the sermons to come.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to IRIB English Radio. We are trying to understand from the Quran and from the teachings of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, how can we look at history so that we can correctly analyze, so that we can correctly analyze those events and extract those general principles that can be helpful for us to be able to see and reflect in our present life, in our present scenarios and occasions. One of the very important things that Quran talks about is the issue of taqwa that Imam Ali alayhi salam also mentions in the phrase that I spoke about. Now that you have understood the past and we've seen what, for example, societies went through because of doing wrong things. For example, some societies got destroyed. Some of the societies suffered economically. Some of the societies, let's say, they were deteriorated completely or were wiped off the face of the earth. What was that thing that is going to stop us from not having those same problems that the previous communities had. That is taqwa. Taqwa and piety becomes a reason that a person does not enter into the areas which are shady, which are doubtful, which are confusing. Now, what is taqwa? What is piety itself? Taqwa can have many meanings. Piety can be understood differently in different ways. So if we say that piety is to always remember God and always to pray and always to, you know, perform some kind of dhikr, this will not stop a person from entering into mistakes in the future and will not be able to take lessons from the past in the most correct manner. They do not have a direct relationship. So what is Imam Ali alayhi salam telling us here? So what type of understanding should we have about piety? Inshallah, we shall discuss about this in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معناه باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من نداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال مناه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمناه هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي رباه.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. There is more carbon dioxide in Earth's atmosphere than at any time in the past 4 million years, as the world's continued dependence on fossil fuels keeps humanity hurtling toward a global catastrophe, officials at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration warned recently. Please stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Brett Wilkins, journalist. This article is published under the heading NOAA says CO2 levels highest in human history. Here's more. There is more carbon dioxide in Earth's atmosphere than at any time in the past 4 million years, as the world's continued dependence on fossil fuels keeps humanity hurtling toward a global catastrophe, officials at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration warned recently. NOAA reports its Mauna Loa Atmospheric Baseline Observatory in Hawaii measured CO2 levels averaging 420.99 parts per million ppm in May, an increase of 1.8 ppm over levels at this time last year, while scientists at San Diego-based Scripps Institute of Oceanography, which also tracks atmospheric CO2, calculated a monthly average of 420.78 ppm. NOAA Administrator Rick Spinard said in a statement, "The science is irrefutable. Humans are altering our climate in ways that our economy and our infrastructure must adapt to. We can see the impacts of climate change around us every day. The relentless increase of carbon dioxide measured at Mauna Loa is a stark reminder that we need to take urgent, serious steps toward climate resiliency and action," he added. As NOAA explains, CO2 pollution is generated by burning fossil fuels for transportation and electrical generation, by cement manufacturing, deforestation, agriculture, and many other practices. Along with other greenhouse gases, CO2 traps heat radiating from the planet's surface that would otherwise escape into space, causing the planet's atmosphere to warm steadily, which unleashes a cascade of weather impacts, including episodes of extreme heat, drought, and wildlife activity, as well as heavier precipitation, flooding, and tropical storm activity. Impacts to the world's oceans from greenhouse gas pollution include increasing sea surface temperatures, rising sea levels, and an increased absorption of carbon, which makes sea water more acidic, leads to ocean deoxygenation and makes it more difficult for some marine organisms to survive. Before the Industrial Revolution, CO2 levels registered around 280 ppm for the entire history of human civilization, or about 6,000 years. Since then, it's estimated that human activity has released more than 1.5 trillion tons of the planet-heating greenhouse gas. CO2 levels are now comparable to the Pliocene climatic optimum, between 4.1 and 4.5 million years ago, when they were close to or above 400 ppm, notes NOAA. During that time, sea levels were between 5 and 25 meters higher than today, high enough to drown many of the world's largest modern cities. Temperatures then averaged 7 degrees Fahrenheit higher than in pre-industrial times, and the studies indicate that large forests occupy today's Arctic tundra. Adequately reducing global CO2 emissions would require a dramatic shift in human activity, especially by the world's wealthiest 1%, who, according to a September 22 study by Oxfam, emit more than twice as much CO2 as the poorest 50% of humanity. It's depressing that we've lacked the collective willpower to slow the relentless rise in CO2, said Ralph Keeling, who runs the Scripps program at the Mountaintop Observatory, adding, "Fossil fuel use may no longer be accelerating, but we are still racing at top speed towards a global catastrophe." Peter Tenz, senior scientist at NOAA's Global Monitoring Lab, said that carbon dioxide is at levels our species has never experienced before. This is not new. We have known about this for half a century and have failed to do anything meaningful about it. What's it going to take for us to wake up? He added.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to be looking at a very noble tradition and hadith narrated from Imam Ali alayhi salam. In this tradition, the Imam mentions the characteristics of an ignorant person, and conversely, we can understand the characteristics of a knowledgeable and wise person by contrasting these characteristics with their opposites. In the beginning of this tradition, the Imam says, "The ignorant is one who considers himself knowledgeable about what he is in fact ignorant of," which means that this person, without a suitable understanding of a certain topic, he feels confident in it and doesn't exercise precaution and perhaps expresses his opinion on any and every subject, even though he doesn't really have any knowledge about what he's talking about. Conversely, we can understand that a wise person is a person who always precautiously is reserved about expressing his opinion about a subject that he doesn't fully have a command about. In continuation, the Imam says, "And he," meaning the ignorant person, "is content with his own opinion. He doesn't regard the opinion of others regarding the subject. He formulates an opinion regarding the subject and expresses it without, you know, looking into and investigating the different other opinions which might have been expressed regarding the subject, and then assessing whether they are correct or not. And then finally, if he finds that the other ones are incorrect, come up with his own opinion regarding the subject." Then the Imam says, "He distances himself from the scholars, and he is constantly finding fault with them," meaning instead of trying to learn from the scholars and increase his knowledge by sitting with them, he finds fault with them. He makes an excuse and finds some small fault with them. He overlooks their knowledge and their good characteristic. He puts his finger on a small, maybe a bad trait that all of them have, because all of us are imperfect except the infallibles and the prophets, and he finds a fault with them and he uses an excuse to distance himself from them, and he doesn't and he doesn't benefit from their knowledge in this way. The Imam then says, "He deems invalid the views of those who oppose him." If he sees that somebody's opposing him and doesn't believe what he believes, he says that their opinion is invalid just because they are opposed to him. And that which he does not understand, he sees as fallacious. Right? He says, if he can't understand something, he says that this is, logically incorrect, or it's wrong, it's plagued with the fallacies and so on and so forth. The Imam says, if he comes across something that he does not know, he denies it and falsifies it, saying out of ignorance, "I've never heard of this. Right? It seems far-fetched. I've never heard of this. How could somebody say something like this?" And this is especially true, especially with regards to lofty philosophical and maybe mystical matters. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at ignorance in the words of Imam Ali. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.